This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. We're going to spend the next part of our program with Tom Hanks. We had the chance to sit down and talk with him last week. He wasn't promoting a new film or a project, but talking about the craft of acting and how he learned it for a PBS show I do a few times a year called Backstage With. We recorded it before an audience of high school drama students at the studios of WVIZ in Cleveland, where I got to introduce the man who salvaged the moon mission, saved Private Ryan, cracked the Mary Magdalene mystery, befriended a lonely volleyball, let a band of broken toys back into a boy's heart, and opened the box of chocolates of life.
Hi. Hey, Scott. Thank you. Thank
Tom Hanks was in Cleveland to help raise funds for the Great Lakes Theater Festival, where he earned his first paycheck for acting in the 1970s. Though, as we'll hear, it was more for moving scenery than audiences. He told the students about his own student days in Oakland, California, and his first production.
My teacher, Raleigh Farnsworth, who was a magnificent man, he chose the plays. They had a lot of money, public schools in those days. So we did two plays every year, a spring, a musical, and a fall play. And he would choose the plays by what scenery he got to design. Because that's what he really loved to do. He loved to build the sets and design them. And so we did Tennessee Williams' Night of the Iguana, you know.
Very steamy stuff.
Well, yeah, it was pretty, very steamy. Yeah. We had fake rain appear, and it took place in this Mexican kind of like villa with iguanas and stuff like that. And I had a few lines as Jake Latta, the guy who comes and takes the tour away from the defrocked priest who is slowly getting drunk and sleeping with everybody who else is in the play. So I came in, I had some lines like, let's have us a rum cocoa Larry boy, and, then I walked out and came back on for the curtain call. And I don't even remember what it was very much, but that was the first role I had in high school.
Tom Hanks had a lot of rejections when he first auditioned for plays after leaving college in California. But he eventually landed a role in a production of Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard at a community theater in Sacramento. It was guest-directed by a man named Vincent Dowling, who offered Tom Hanks a job at his theater in Cleveland.
When you got to the Great Lakes Shakespeare Festival, as it was called then,
are we allowed to say that? Because I think the staff of Great Lakes Theater Festival goes,
well, I'll retake that. When you got to the Great Lakes Theater Festival,
yes.
Did you do more scenery than Shakespeare?
Oh, God, the first season, I think we were only there to move scenery. I think Vincent was smart, you know. He said, now, I cannot pay you any money, but I can give you something just as valuable, experience working in the professional theater. What he should have said, which means you'll be working to 3 o'clock in the morning. You will change over the sets every night, starting at 11 and not finishing until 3 in the morning. And then you will get up at 8 in the morning to build more sets that you will change over again. That's what we did. We all had at least one speaking role. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the line was, what from the Cape can you discern at sea? You know, so, but we all had that. We understudied the professional equity company, but mostly we were there as bodies to service the changeover. So we did a lot. But I had enough of a background in that it wasn't intimidating, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
What else are you going to do in the West when you don't have any money in your pocket, and you're on the west side of Cleveland? You might as well go down to the theater and change over the sets till 2 o'clock in the morning, because there's really nothing else to do.
What's the gritty perspiration part of being a professional actor, even today, at your level that people don't see? I mean, I assume you're no longer working scenery, but...
No. That's
a union job. Yeah.
There's sometimes that you end up doing some version of the same thing. The grunt work is, it's sort of in the timing. You have a moment, you know what you're shooting that day, you know what is emotionally asked of you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it requires dialogue, sometimes it's not. You can't just learn your lines and go in and say it. You have to have carried with you around long enough the emotional baggage to get where you're going to have to be. Now, that can be something that it rips your guts out. There was, for example, in a movie, Castaway, Mm-hmm. I knew when we first started doing Castaway that there was going to have to be a day in which I was going to have to mourn the loss of my friend Wilson. And I knew that that was going to be
the volleyball.
And I knew it was going to be, I was going to be on a raft somewhere in the world. I knew it was, you know, it was going to be a barge with a bunch of camera crew on it and stuff like that. And you have to forget that and just be ready to do it. Because it would be really bad to go all halfway around the world to come up on that shooting day and say, you know what, I don't got it. I can't make this happen today. So that you got to suck up and get that done.
Whose idea was the volleyball as
that was pal? Bill Broyles, William Broyles, the screenwriter. He was a former editor of Newsweek magazine. He created Texas Monthly. He's a great writer. He and I had done a number of things together, and we started working on that. And he created this idea of, and then Bob Zemeckis, he created the idea of it be coming out of my own blood, because I cut my hand and then I throw the ball and there's a little thing and I draw a face on it. So that's how movies are made. Somebody has an idea and somebody improves on it, and then you make it up as you get there. That's how it always works.
We're going to turn to our students for questions.
Hi, I'm Chris Bellinger from Our Lady of the Elms, and this one's kind of appropriate. After Castaway, was playing volleyball awkward?
you never look at it the same, I tell you. You know, I believe
spiking
the
spiking your belt.
You can't do that. You can't do that. You always like put it up on. Put it up on a little thing and sit down and have a conversation with it. Bob Zemeckis said, you know what we should do? We should have one of those, those commentaries on the DVD in which you do Wilson's lines, because we had lines for everything that Wilson said. When I was having those one-sided conversation, Bob was like, what's Wilson saying right now? He said, are you crazy? You can't get up there. You got to come down here and make a fire. What are you doing? Where are you going? Come back in this cave. Don't leave me here all by myself. It's a special bond. And I think Wilson made those volleyballs, you know, with a Wilson face on it. I think they made a couple of bucks off it. I didn't get any of it, but that's okay. Please.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Beverstock, and I'm a junior at Magnificat. You've played a very diverse range of characters and have really transformed yourself into every role. So I was wondering if you ever find yourself acting like one of your characters, or having a character become part of your identity, or even dreaming in character?
No, I don't dream like characters, but I have nightmares about not being able to perform them well. It's the actor's nightmare. You know, I've had dreams about trying to show up for a set and not knowing my lines and being in a different movie. That's which always is a good sign. That means, you know, you're sweating the details. I do have a tendency, in order to get enmeshed in the life of the character, for example, doing a Apollo 13, I got to walk around in really cool spaceman uniforms, you know, with patches on them and stuff like that, and I could swagger a little bit. And I think I probably came home and was acting like Jim Lovell a little bit too often, you know. Why don't you take care of this? How come, what's going on? Why is this done? For crying out loud, I got it. And I was told in no unqualified terms to knock it off. I said, oh, sorry. Went a little bit deep in there. But that's the fun of being an actor, is that you go and you get to be completely enmeshed in something that's usually very pleasant. You know, the number of the movie that I made with one of the people here was an assistant AP on League of Their Own, which we made down in Indiana. All I did was play baseball all summer long. I drank beer, ate hot dogs, and played baseball all summer long. It was very hard to get back into real life after after spending that kind of summer. Can't believe they paid me to do that.
Please.
Hello, I'm Selma Bislam from Mayfield High School. I'm a junior, and my question is, Mr. Hanks, if you could pick anyone in the movie industry from the past or present, who would you want to meet with tonight?
I would probably want to meet with Stanley Kubrick, the director of 2001: A Space Odyssey, Eyes Wide Shut, because he was really he was an uncompromising filmmaker. And I, at 2001: A Space Odyssey, I saw that when I was in eighth or ninth grade, and it really altered my life, because I thought what movies were And I thought movies were like James Bond movies and John Wayne movies. Then I saw this thing that almost had no dialogue in it for the first 40 minutes and really altered my artistic horizon. Usually movies are you hit a schedule and you work and you bang it out and you have to get it. And it's a disaster when you're not finished and you might have to come back and get all the... He'd work just the opposite way. He would build the set and he would wait till it was right and he'd rewrite things. And the crews were small. It wasn't expensive. It was right. You get it. He'd get an idea and go on some other set and shoot something else for a while. And out of that, he created probably, five or six, Doctor Strangelove, 2001 A Space Odyssey, Lolita, Eyes Wide Shut, and
Paths of Glory,
Full Metal Jacket, which are, probably, five or six of the greatest motion pictures of all time. I'd like to talk to him.
But you never met Kubrick?
I never did, no. I would have been too afraid to meet him. So, don't want to meet your idols.
Hi, Mr. Hanks. My name is Catherine Stoltz, and I'm a junior at Magnificat. I was wondering, what got you interested in the topic of outer space, and how did it feel to get to play the part of Jim Lovell in Apollo 13?
Well, have you been assigned these questions, or did you actually did you pick them out of a hat? I was a kid when during the Gemini space program, and we stopped class in order to watch the launches and the splashdowns and things like that. At the time, it was the main story. It was a joining of politics, world culture, because we were in a race against the Soviet Union. It was science. It was a high adventure, and for me, it was very, very poetic and almost spiritual, this idea of going into this lifeless void, human beings, and then coming back. I just felt as though... I remember we had a... my dad drove a 1965 VW bus. A Bug. That was his car. And I remember Walter Cronkite saying, and of course the Gemini spacecraft itself is not much larger than a Volkswagen Bug. And I thought, I went out and immediately just sat in the Volkswagen Bug. We had this little sunroof. You could go out and you look out that way and you close it up again. I was pretending all the switches were like retro rockets and whatnot. And I thought, these guys are in space in something that's not much bigger than this. So I ended up just following it all along. And, how often are you alive during a specific moment in the history of humanity? In 1968 through 1969, human beings were going to walk on the moon for the first time. That's equal to human beings, flying for the first time, or Magellan circumnavigating the globe. I just felt it's so great to be a kid knowing that I'll remember where I was when we finally set foot on the moon and then came back. So I still can't get enough of it. And Jim Lovell, at first I was like, how can I play an astronaut? They're all like science and engineers. Jim Lovell is a very delightful, hilarious guy. He is as competitive as the day is long. And I'm perfect casting for Jim Lovell. And I still stay in touch with him every now and again. He's lives in both Chicago and Texas, and we keep up.
We've got some questions that were sent in from students who've been watching online.
Oh, really?
And at distance learning sites.
See, there is no privacy. There is.
Karis Kurzbuck, hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, says, what was your favorite part about filming Angels and Demons?
Well, it's great people. We do laugh a lot. I don't want to discount that, but laughing to me is really is really important. Being able to joke around. It was to shoot in Rome. Understand, this is what we did. We shot in Rome. We in the Piazza Navona. This is about as famous a place as there is on the planet Earth. And you're shooting at the Piazza Navona, and you control it completely yourself. It's shut down for you, all on a beautiful, warm night in Rome, in the Italian summer. And a guy who runs a sidewalk cafe in Rome, in which some of the crew have gone and had dinner there prior to shooting, has decided, you know what? I'll stay open for you guys. So all night long, you're in Rome, shooting full moon, empty arms, and here's a guy, please, sit, I make, don't worry. And all night long, you're just sitting in your private Piazza Navona, having a cappuccino, having a little bit of antipasta. So they're ready for you. You get up and you shoot for a while, and you go back and you sit. Is there a more delightful way to make a living than that? My gosh. I mean, it's the access that you get when you're making movies is really quite spectacular. And both making films and promoting them around the world, I have been places that I never, ever would have been able to go or to see. And when we were making the Da Vinci Code, I actually turned 49. What year was it? My birthday was spent in the Louvre. It became July 9th in the Louvre. So I literally had the French crew saying happy birthday to me in French at 2 o'clock in the morning in front of the Mona Lisa. And then we had cake that you are not supposed to bring into the Louvre. But we brought cake into the Louvre nonetheless. And I mean, this is a once in a lifetime. How do you get to do that? Well, you get to do it by making movies.
And how is that different than working in Cleveland?
Now there is the Mona Lisa with birthday cake, but there's also, say, Corky and Lenny's with a nice deli sandwich, Tony's Diner from an excellent piece of pumpkin pie. The TikTok Tavern has great ribs. The Mary Arts makes a nice cheeseburger, and I believe they have taco nights on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So as you can see, it's all relative. It's all relative.
Tom Hanks speaking last week at a taping of the public television show Backstage With. The program will air in Cleveland in January, and then on PBS stations across the country. Special thanks to WVIZ, the Great Lakes Theater Festival, and Cleveland's Playhouse Square. You can hear more of our conversation, including Tom Hanks on the rigors of doing voiceovers, and how Ron Howard directs a movie underwater, all of that on our website, npr.org. And this is Weekend Edition from NPR News, directed by Elaine Heinzman, produced by Sarah Barr Kelly, Kimberly Adams, Thomas Pierce, Susanna George, Veronica Miller, and Carolyn Beeler, with assistance from our interns, Sarah Molnar and Annika Robbins. Our technical director is Burke Hun, so ably assisted by Nathan Bark and Greg Gavin. Our reference, reference librarian is Kim Molesky. I'm getting choked up because she brought some librarians here, a gaggle of library students from the University of North Carolina. By the way, they say gaggle. That's the term for the plural of librarians. Our web producer is Melissa Goh. Our senior editor is Tony Marcano. Our show was produced today by Ned Wharton. You bringing the music up. The senior producer of Weekend Edition is Devar Iran Ardalan. I'm Scott Simon.